Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 158, recorded April 8, 2013.
So, with what greeting will you grace us today?
Aloha.
There you go.
How about that?
That one's good.
Okay. I think probably everybody knows that one. I don't have to explain that one. Okay. Well, we have Scott in Fort Worth, Texas today, and Juliet in Paris, France, and Mick in Carnforth, UK. Do you have anything else for us on our end before we start with our communiques?
Well, I did want to mention, I hope you all had a chance to view our April Fool's Frog presentation.
Oh, yes, we forgot to talk about it last week.
That was the thing I wanted to remember last week, and I couldn't remember. That we put that video up with the so-called do-it-yourself hydrophone with the frogs eating the daphnia.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, on our YouTube channel.
So hopefully you guys saw it and liked it.
Yeah, and of course it wasn't really a hydrophone. It was just sound effects, but it was kind of fun.
No. It was really a hydrophone.
But it was an April Fool's joke.
Exactly.
And then we've got, what else? Oh, yes. I've got some news.
Tell us the news.
I got with my annual tax return allotment that I am allowed to use on pet stuff. I usually get a little bit to use on that, and I bought a UV sterilizer.
And what tank are you putting that on?
Probably the 55.
55?
Yes. And
After talking to
Diana Wolstead.
Diana Wolstead,
yeah. I haven't really had a whole lot of issues for quite a while now with mycobacteriosis, but she said that it was a really good idea, and I'd like to just try it. So I bought the same brand that she recommended, or at least the descendant of that brand, and I'm planning on installing it very soon. So I will update you on how that goes and whether or not it works. I bought some other things, too.
What else did you get?
Well, I got
anything interesting?
Lunar light.
Oh, yeah.
LED
moonlight
for the goldfish tank. Yeah, and installed that. It looks pretty nice, doesn't it? And some other just supplies like dechlorinator and Flourish Excel and so on.
That's not quite as fun, huh?
No.
Just necessary.
Yes. Oh, and I took the video of the shrimp that I showed you.
Oh, yes. So we'll be putting that together into a video.
About that, yeah. That'll be fun. In the tank in our bedroom that we've been talking about with combating the algae with Amazon frogbit and so on.
Mm-hmm.
The algae, it looks good, doesn't it, the tank?
Yeah, the tank looks really nice now.
We trimmed
a bunch of stuff and it looks lovely.
Yeah, the only thing that we did to it was add the frog bit and then just periodically harvesting the frog bit for nutrient export. That seemed to have done the trick. So I trimmed the tank just a bit. It's still a jumbled jungle. But
I like it though. It looks like a little fairy tank.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. So
it's pretty.
We'll put some video up of the shrimp that I've been taking. There are our fairy shrimp, sorry.
It's because I just said fairy.
Yes, our red cherry shrimp.
And see, it even rhymes.
It does.
Cherry, fairy.
Cherry and fairy. Been breeding like crazy in there. And I'm wondering, we'll talk about it when we get to Juliet's question, but I'm wondering if it is a seasonal thing with shrimp. But
we'll get into that in more depth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we'll start with Scott in Fort Worth, Texas. And he says...
He's a new contributor,
so welcome.
Yes, welcome indeed.
He said, I started listening to your shows a few months back, and now can't wait for each new installment. I love how your family engages with one another through this hobby. That is really cool. Thank you.
I like that, too.
I think it's pretty fun. I'm wondering if you would ever consider having a dwarf cichlid expert on your show, that is, if you can find one. I'm discovering more and more beautiful little fish that I wish I had known about long ago, all of which seem to fall under dwarf cichlid. Rams and cribs are popular, but it seems there is so much more. I, for one, would find such a show to be fascinating.
So would I. And I sent him a quick email, sent Scott an email, and we'd love to do that. It's a great idea. So we just need to get someone to talk about cichlids, dwarf cichlids.
So we're going to do some research and find somebody.
And so those of you listeners out there who have had experience with dwarf cichlids, and if you'd like to do a show with us, an interview show, we'd love to have you. I know Mick has kept quite a number of cichlids,
mm-hmm.
including, I believe, some of the pistos. He's had cockatoo cichlids before. I think he still does, and he's had them for quite a while.
He's had quite a few different ones.
Mick might be a good resource if he's
interested. That would be fun.
Yeah. And anyone else who'd be interested in doing that, just let us know.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll get somebody on. It is really easy now, technologically, to do an interview for us.
Yes, we got the phone thing all worked out.
And for you, it's really easy, too. So, you know, that's not really an obstacle. Generally, if you... We can figure out a way to do it that won't cost you any more than calling someone out somewhere else in your own state or country. So, with those of you who have long-distance plans that allow for that, we're set.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go.
He has a quick shrimp question, too. He says, what do you know about blueberry shrimp? Are they easy to breed? I think I have a swarm of those guys in my planted 40-gallon... Oh, I'm sorry. I think having a swarm of those guys in my planted 40-gallon would look incredible. If they do breed in the aquarium easily, how fast do they do so? I've heard of people breeding other shrimp, specifically red cherry, at a good rate to allow for regular snacking from tank mates without losing the whole population. It just seems that nice-looking functional shrimp are simply too expensive to just be food.
Indeed. I agree.
And I think we have some other listeners who would agree.
Yes, that's true. And blueberry shrimp, one of the issues here is identifying which species you're talking about, because apparently the common name blueberry shrimp has been applied to a number of other species. A number of species, I should say. There's one species that I believe is Neocaridina palmata. I believe that's the one. Mm-hmm. And that one is very similar to a red cherry shrimp, same genus. They'd probably hybridize with red cherry shrimp if they were kept in the same tank, and not a good thing. You'd probably get ugly colors.
You'd get purple.
But they... I tend to
doubt it. Are blueberry shrimp actually blue?
They are.
Or are they just that kind of gray shrimp?
No, they're quite blue.
They're really bright,
not like
vibrant
Taiwan
blue.
But they're quite blue, yeah.
Okay. So maybe you would get purple. That'd be awesome. You could call them painted shrimp.
I rather doubt that you would get purple,
oh,
but
come
that'd
on.
Be kind of fun. Someone probably would
blue
already
and
done
red,
it.
Red, that makes purple, right? If we breed yellow and blue shrimp, do we get green shrimp?
It usually doesn't work that way.
Dang, that's too bad.
There are occasions when things like that work, but not usually.
Just with paint.
Not usually. But sometimes it does. No, actually with, we won't go into that right now. But anyway, there's that species. There's another Caridina species that is sometimes called the blueberry shrimp, and they're much bigger. And there's several out there, but if you get the Neocaridina palmata, from what I have read, and I would say, you know, I can't tell you a whole lot beyond this because I have never kept blueberry shrimp, but they are supposedly very similar to red cherry shrimp in most respects, and would probably be similarly prolific and do fine in similar setups. So I would say, you know, that's worth a look anyway.
Did you ask him to send us a picture of his... Oh, he doesn't have any yet.
He doesn't have any yet. He's just looking into it.
Of the kind he's thinking of getting?
That could be useful. That could be useful. Maybe we could, if he could identify the species he's interested in.
That would be good.
And I would say safest not to buy them online unless somebody can identify them by their scientific name.
Yeah.
Just in case. Oh, another thing is that some varieties of shrimp sold as blueberry shrimp don't seem to breed true.
What do they come out as?
They think
purple?
It may be something in the wild that...
That was a joke. You missed it.
What? Oh, sorry. I didn't miss it. Sorry, I was focusing.
I said, what do they come out as? Purple?
Oh, no. Oh,
that was my running gag. Maybe it should be a swimming gag.
A swimming gag.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. I think some of them, they don't tend to breed true, or at least all of the babies that they produce.
They don't come out blue.
They're not necessarily blue, but it depends on the, you know, the strain you're getting and so on.
What do they come out as?
Well, some of them will come out in the wild coloration.
Oh.
And there's some people say they've been dyed. Other people say it's something they eat in the wild and they can't get in captive situation. You know, there's probably people who speculate that it's a
it's
pathogen.
Aliens. It's aliens.
Well, you know, they're Corydoras catfish.
No, it's UFO. That's all.
Do you know that there are Corydoras catfish that have pathogens that inhabit the outside of
like
their skin.
Like parasites?
Yeah, and it changes their colors.
Weird.
Yeah, I should say parasites.
See, that's almost aliens.
Almost. Yeah, and then if they breed, the life cycle of this parasite doesn't... Mm-hmm. They can't transfer to the young because there aren't the right vectors that there are in the wild or whatever.
Okay.
So they don't get it, and so the babies don't turn out those colors.
Huh.
Several fish, not just Corydoras catfish. There's some tetras like that, too.
That's weird.
So it may be something like that with the shrimp. That's pure speculation on my part, but it's possible. But, like I said, not all of them are like that. I know the orange-eyed blue tiger shrimp, they tend to breed more true, although they throw some blonde tiger shrimp that also have orange eyes, but they're not blue.
Interesting.
So you get all kinds of interesting stuff. And, of course, color in the shrimp is also related to stress levels, pH, and all those things can influence their color as well. Some shrimp will turn quite blue when they're stressed, and then once they relax, they're no longer blue.
Hmm.
So.
Shrimp are funky.
Yeah. I hope that's just, it's not a whole lot of information. I wish I could have provided more, but we're glad to have Scott on board as a contributor. Yeah,
but if he senses a picture of the species that he wants to get, perhaps you could give him more specific to that species.
Mm-hmm.
So, I believe we have Juliet next.
All right.
Paris, in France. And she says, "Hi, me and my non-breeding shrimp again. In my nano, cutting the tap water with RO has brought the pH down from 8.3 to about 7.3. I got two buried females from my local fish store and took great pains to get them used to the tank water by very slowly adding some to their bucket over 2 hours. Horror of horrors, one molted a few days later, and with the old shell went the eggs." How does that work? Do they stick to the old shell? How are they carried that way?
I'm guessing that that's what happens, because they're attached to the swimmerettes.
Mm-hmm. Underneath?
Underneath there. And it would be very hard for them not to come off with the exoskeleton.
That's so sad.
Yeah, that's
like a shrimp miscarriage or something.
It's sad.
Yeah. But today I am happy to say that the other has released its at least 10 young shrimplets that are doing fine. Yay! That's exciting. And now two of my own females are buried, finally. So Juliet has good news.
Yeah. Yeah, congratulations. I'm glad it's working.
Yeah.
As I was alluding to before, I really do wonder if it has something to do with the season, because during the winter I had very, very few of the cherry shrimp showing up. In terms of the babies showing up. Very, very few. I did see a few buried females, but they didn't seem to be doing well. I wasn't seeing a lot of babies, a few. But suddenly, just wham, I have at least three or four broods in there that are just growing up like crazy of different sizes. So I have half-inch shrimp, 3/8 of an inch shrimp.
And teeny-tiny shrimp.
Yeah, and all the way down to just newly hatched shrimp. And they're all over the tank. And it's just, it happened very fast. And it did happen roughly with the onset of the change in the weather. So it may be day length, it may be something, I don't know, related to that, some sort of seasonal cue.
Now, have we heard from somebody, because was it Mick who was not getting any babies for a while too?
Mick said he was having some issues with that, and then they started showing up. He has had some more. And I think it was Aaron, maybe? Was it Aaron or Ryan? I can't remember who it was, who was talking about it. We'd have
Same
to look
thing.
Back. And they were saying, they offered this idea, the seasonality, because, and they were mentioning their photo period was the only thing they changed, and
that
it resulted
kind of
in more shrimp.
Simulate the same kind of,
exactly.
Sorry, I'm having trouble talking
to you. They were changing the artificial photo period, but that seemed to work for them, so.
And Juliet does say here, "I used to breed many red cherry shrimp in the local tap water without cutting it. So I'm guessing it's seasonal, but I wish I could be sure."
Yeah, and I don't know that we can be entirely sure without an empirical study, but
Somebody do a thesis.
Various anecdotal reports that do tend to support that, so that is at least something.
She has a question, too.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "What happens if you have a pH of 7.3 but add a chunk of cuttlefish bone to the tank? A shrimp keeper said it was good for their shells. I'd like your feedback. Is it just going to make the pH go up, and is it really of any help to the shrimp?"
Well, I would say if the shrimp are doing well, and I think you're probably getting enough calcium in the water with regular partial water changes anyway, if they're doing well, then that's probably an indication that that's what's going on. They probably don't need it. If you do put it in, the cuttlefish bone is porous, and so it has kind of a lot of surface area, and you will get, I'm certain, some calcium ions leaching into the water. Which wouldn't necessarily be bad for the shrimp if you just use a small amount. You use too much and you can have some pH fluctuations that could be bad, of course. But once that initial process happens, you're likely to get a biofilm that'll kind of settle over the cuttlefish bone, kind of insulate it from dissolving into the water, and so you probably won't get a whole lot going on. Unless
if it's got that film over it, can they even use it?
Well, That's what I'm saying. There's not. It's not going to be very reactive with the water once it gets that film on it. And so not a whole lot will happen with it. Unless you have, say, snails in there who are chewing at it, or some other organism that's actually chewing at it.
How would the shrimp use it? Do they eat it, or is it just they absorb it from the water?
You know, that's a great question. I would suspect that the shrimp mostly benefit from the calcium that would leach into water.
So once it stops leaching, it's not going to be any good to them anyways.
Right. Although if you do have snails who are nibbling on it and exposing, you know, fresh cuttlebone surface to the water, that could be different.
Okay.
And then they'll probably
be... I don't know if she has snails in her shrimp tank or if she's just got the shrimp.
She's mentioned in past that she has snails. I'm not sure there are snails in this particular tank at this particular time. But I would say, you know, as long as they're doing fine, it's not really...
You don't really need it?
You don't really need to add it.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there's... With the pH of her tap water, there's bound to be some calcium ions in there.
That's probably true. So hopefully that's helpful, Juliet, and thank you for writing in again. And let's take our break before we go on to Mick.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Piscy Now.
Okay, welcome back. We are going to proceed with Mick's email now. He says, I had a sudden wipe out of everything in my Malawi setup. I had noticed that they suddenly went off their food, very unlike Malawi cichlids, and then an overnight mass breakout of white spot, which despite starting a course of treatment, killed everything off in a couple of days.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear about that.
I tested all the water parameters and all checked out fine, so I have no idea as to the cause, but I have stripped down the tank and sterilized everything, and it is now a work in progress for the new axolotl setup. So, good out of bad,
yeah.
As he says. I was going to have to buy a new large tank for them, so perhaps a good thing out of bad, as I now have room for a few more smaller breeding tanks for other projects.
Puzzling situation there.
Yeah, that's kind of out of the blue, huh?
Yeah, the first thing you'd think, if they're not eating, water quality issue, but... Says it, all checked out, so I wonder what was going on there. And then white spot attacking that quickly. That's another thing indicative of some parameter out of whack. So
yeah, that's weird.
It's really surprising, strange situation. But anyway, yeah, as Mick indicated, good out of bad. Kind of phoenix rising from the ashes.
An axolotl rising from the water.
From the detritus?
From the detritus, yes. Ooh, detritus is a great word.
Yeah.
Okay. I have had quite an increase in fry numbers lately with Morcubensis, Black Mollies, Koi Swordtails, Blue Mickey Mouse Pleiades, Knife Live Bears, and most recently, and most excitingly, my first ever spawn of Ancestress.
I love
so
those.
Busy times feeding fry, checking drop tanks, and watching the male Ancestress guard with much gusto his cave, which is now home to quite a number of tadpoles. Now, remind me which ones are Ancestress.
Ancestress Bristlies.
Oh.
Bristlenoses. That's their scientific name.
Oh, okay.
Ancestress.
I just never call them that, huh?
No.
Okay.
But that's okay. We usually call them bristlies or bristlenoses.
Right.
But, yeah.
Okay.
It's just, we're using the common name, he's using the scientific name.
Okay.
Yep. And I believe his are albinos.
Oh, really?
I think so. If I remember from the picture, I think the male that I saw there was an albino.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He has some other fun news,
too. Oh, cool. Yeah. Oh, yes, he does, doesn't he?
He says, I finally got my musk turtle. It is a razorback hatchling, which I have named Bic, after the popular disposable razor brand here in the UK, which we also have here in the US.
Yes, we love that name.
That's a very
that
cute name.
That was cool.
Because, you know, it's a razor, and he's a razorback.
Plus, a small name for a small turtle.
Yeah, it's good.
That's good fitting.
How big do they get?
Oh, well, musk turtles don't get that big, mostly, but...
So it'll still fit him when he's older.
Yeah, well, he'll always be a razorback, so...
Well, yeah.
But most musk turtles, anyway, the ones I'm thinking of, don't get huge. They're not...
Okay.
Not really big.
Says he's feeding well for such a little thing on bloodworm, cultured whiteworm, and also supplemented with hikari crab cuisine for extra calcium. He seems eager to eat just about anything, and when he is finished, he loves to bask out of the water, so I've installed a 10% UVB light above his tank.
Hmm. And that's what we were discussing, weren't we?
And he sent pictures.
Yes, he did.
Of the wee turtle.
Mm-hmm.
So we can put those up.
Yep, that reminds me of a good quote.
Oh, yes.
Save the wee... No, what? Sorry.
Save me.
Save me from the wee turtles! They were too quick for me!
So who knows... Okay, who knows what that one is? I do. I know. Oh, that's another quote. Wee knows! Wee knows! Shut up!
Okay.
Okay, so if you know either of those two, go put it on the Facebook page and make my day for knowing her quotes. Well, let's see. Actually, I think that's about it for this week. Do we have anything else?
Is it really?
That we're going to talk about.
Amazing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's about it. Just
unless, you know, you want us to just sit here spouting random bizarre movie quotes for 10 more minutes,
no,
but
no.
Probably not.
I wanted to mention that we were going to put mixed pictures up on the page. Or did we already say that?
I think so, but you can mention it again.
Okay, I'll mention it again. We're going to put mixed pictures on the show page, so make sure to check them out. We're also going to be putting up a video of our shrimp pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And
with the little babies.
The little baby babies, yeah. We got some close-up, you know, macro shots of some of our shrimp in the tank, including really tiny, newly released babies. So I hope you enjoy that. And
we'll work on finding a dwarf cichlid person to interview.
Yes, if you are one or you plan to be one in the near future, please contact us. Okay.
That was your funny announcer
voice. Yes, it was. I like that one.
That's a good one.
Okay.
In the meantime,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.